This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I'm with friends, I like to have fun! I like to sing, dance, pretend, and kazoo!
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Jimenez, Dendonca, getting into a shooting position and scoring. No sooner has Adama Traore come on the field than he makes a contribution that has a big effect. And the relegation picture goes from bad to worse for the men in claret and blue.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host for the show that will hopefully give you a bit of sanity amongst the claret and blue sufferings of recent weeks. It will also hopefully not take you about an hour or so closer to Villa's relegation. We're trying to hold back on that one. Anyway, joining me, it's almost like a reunion of Match Club. Mr. Dan Rogers of the Villa Underground, welcome.
Hello.
Mr. Phil Shaw.
Hello.
Welcome. And the omnipresent Mr. Christopher Budd, welcome.
Hello.
How are you all feeling?
Optimistic. Oh, no.
Delete.
Sorry.
What, in life in general, or are you already talking about the Villa?
Well, I think this is going to be quite the comeback, isn't it? I think when we survive on the lowest ever points tally by drawing our way out of the out of the relegation zone, it's going to be quite a story. It'll be an Amazon Prime not to be missed next year.
How are you, Phil?
Yeah, just still recovering from Saturday lunchtime. Just managed to ruin your weekend ever earlier every week.
I don't know. I mean, I felt quite sober. I mean, I don't mean from a drinking context, but coming out of Match Club after we must have spent about an hour talking about it. It's almost like a bonus live podcast in there. I mean, any game that you get beat, the instant reaction is, you're not happy. But we'll get into the old Wolves thing. Are you all right, Mr. Bud?
Not bad.
That's all I need. As long as there's a pulse from Mr. Bud, the whole world's okay.
Pulse optional.
Yeah. Right, coming up in the My Old Man's Head podcast, episode 108. We will have a quick look at Villa news. Not much shaking there. Few players released. Also a headline sponsor released as well. Then we'll get you into the 3 points. We'll blaze through those swiftly. And then into the meat and gravy of the Wolves clash and the context of what's happening. Dean Smith's position, Grealish's position, etc., etc. And then bringing up the rear of the show in overrated and underrated. Mr. What was his nickname? Was it Inch Eye? Inchi Alan Wright? Was that somebody else?
I don't remember that.
Inchi. Oh, no, that was Adrian Heath. Sorry. he was even smaller than Adrian Heath, if that was possible. And also Mr. Bosco Balaban. We were always going to have Bosco on this show. It's just a matter of when we decided to slot him in the overrated and underrated. Right, let's get into this. First of all, Villa news, not officially announced, although it's more like educated guesswork, isn't it, in terms of Borja Baston.
Yep.
Callum O'Hare. James Chester. Who else has been chopped apart from...
Doyle Hayes, Andre Green, Hepburn Murphy, who's actually got about a million names, apparently.
Yeah, well,
a few young lads.
That was
officially Ross was McCormack as well. Ross McCormack has officially left the club.
No, I still had hope for him.
Yeah, Sarkic, and then a few of the kids.
When he appears at the London Stadium in a few weeks' time.
And we roll him onto the pitch.
I mean, we'll discuss that more when it comes to the end of the season in the context of, we're going to be rebuilding, maybe not so drastically, whether we stay up or not. But we'll talk about those guys and them leaving. They're almost like not worth talking about. Chester's run his course, paid his dues. So
we took his knees and we've let him go, haven't we, basically?
Yeah, exactly. Also, W88, that old Wolves sponsor, is also now an ex-Villa sponsor. Their deal has been cancelled after a year. I mean, these things, the only statement you get from Villa is like literally two lines. It's funny how it's timed as we're looking likely to drop. Maybe it's W88 saying, we need to be in the Premier League. If we're spending money on English promotion, it needs to be in the Premier League, because they normally, these companies, they are advertising for their domestic markets, and that is all Premier League based. They won't be screening Aston Villa in the Championship, so maybe it is them jumping the gun rather than the spin that will be, oh, Villa have got better, bigger plans ahead.
Ouch! Oh, hi. Wait a minute. Who are you?
Kazoo.
You know what? I think we're going to be friends.
Special friends.
Let's get on to the 3 points. The first point, is this the first podcast since Liverpool are the almighty English champions?
Yeah.
I think it is.
To add to European and world, and won't we ever stop hearing about that?
Good of them to try to burn down their own building by firing fireworks at it. I thought that was a faux pas.
Their stadium, no social distancing there.
The mess as well, I mean, oh man. If I reach that age where I'm moaning about litter, but even I was impressed by the amount of litter that they managed to drop outside there.
Yeah, you're sounding all very middle-aged and...
Think of the recycling.
what's the name? Mary Whitehouse. I don't know if you're old enough to remember her. Anyway, they Liverpool will get a guard of honor, and it's all in the timing. They happen to be playing Manchester City at the Etihad.
I bet they're chuffed.
Elated. Pep Guardiola said, "We are going to do the guard of honor. Of course we will greet Liverpool when they come to our house in an incredible way. We are going to do it because they deserve it." I mean, he's quite right. I mean, it's a great achievement by Klopp to storm the league. Although I will caveat that and say this is a Premier League where there's so many teams in transition. Your Arsenals, your Manchester Uniteds, your Spurs. And Manchester City have obviously just won. You know, they've won. It's hard for them to retain the title. You lose a little bit of intensity because they think it's kind of a foregone conclusion. But Liverpool, as I said at the start, the first podcast of the new season, my tip was Liverpool to win the league, because last season with one defeat and a European Cup win suggests that they had the mettle for the job. And they also had that desire, that 30 years desire. So for me, they were always the most likely.
I thought you were going to use the horrible phrase of 30 years of hurt then. That they've been using all week.
No. God. Right, moving on to new managers. No, these are not Aston Villa's new manager. One, Mr. Neil Warnock, still going strong, joined the Borough. I think they beat Stoke straight off the bat. I can't remember how many Borough managers have failed to win their first game, but it's a long, long list. Warnock does have the knack of getting a ship into order pretty quickly.
Well, I think that there was no better illustration than he arrived and immediately homed in on anyone associated with Aston Villa Football Club. And I think he's pretty much his first day. He told Rudiger Stead to go home. and he didn't feature. I think that's says it all, really, doesn't it? I do like that there's a little story in the Teesside Gazette for those people who don't get it delivered in Birmingham or further afield, that Gusted was, I think, stalling on a contract deal, and Warnock politely apparently told him, well, you might as well go home. And Gusted was like, well, I'm under contract. And Warnock just told him, well, you have my permission to go home. And he was cleared off.
Self-isolate Rudy. But I haven't got any symptoms of COVID. You're misreading the message here, son.
Fuck off.
Yeah, we're shielding ourselves from you.
Anyway, second up, new international manager, Mr. Ian Barraclough, has taken over at Northern Ireland. He was a bit of a Southgate kind of appointment. He was the under-21 boss from 2017 and has been touted, as celebrated as their most successful under-21 boss. I think that's mainly because they beat Spain and because they didn't actually qualify for the Euros, if I am not mistaken. I think they finished second. Our Northern Ireland expert, who actually lives there, Phil.
let's go live to our correspondent.
Yeah, let's go live to Northern Ireland. Phil, what are you thinking?
The under-21 manager is a strange position in Northern Ireland, because if you're 21 and you're good enough, you're not playing for the under-21s, you're straight up. In fact, if you're 18, 19, you're straight into the team. So this will be the first chance probably he's got to work with some of these young players like Jamal Lewis and things, because having to play under-21 matches with 17 and 18-year-olds. So he's obviously done quite well to get there. So,
but some of those players, I mean, like you, Peacock Farrell's Jamal Lewis would have played with him a couple of years ago, surely. Jordan Thompson, Gavin White.
Yeah, but again, you look down their appearances for the under-21s and it's like one or two, because then with our limited pool of resources, it's like, oh, he can kick a ball straight into the first team. Let's go.
But
it's a method that's worked for years.
But the previous manager was it Michael O'Neill?
Mm. Yeah, he.
Why did he leave?
Just because I think you get this stage when you can sort of see the writing on the wall at Northern Ireland. We work in like generations. It's not so much the golden generation; it's more the capable generation.
Yeah, it's the banging your head against the wall generation.
Yeah, so you get. I mean, Steve Davis has only got a couple more years left in him.
He's 53 now, isn't he? And still there. Still dictating the midfield.
Yeah, still passing sideways.
But I think in terms of trying to nurture something from the roots up, it's probably the best way that Northern Ireland can go.
Yeah, I mean, we've...
To have any success.
We've got good facilities, as you can see, with most people coming over to Northern Ireland to do their UEFA B and UEFA licences.
Yeah, Gabby Obongho,
And John Terry.
But he didn't finish it, though, did he?
No, he didn't. He was postponed because we got to the playoff final last year, and as yet, as far as I can tell, he still hasn't done it.
As far as you can tell watching Aston Villa. Yeah.
Well deduced.
Well, yeah, good deduction. And you're over in Northern Ireland, so it must be really obvious.
Haven't Villa signed a young Northern Irish midfielder? Is it McBride?
He's signed from Glentoran, who I should have his name there. It doesn't matter, because he only got a couple of games for Glentoran as well. It's the same thing.
He's very young. He's only 17.
Yeah, any promise at all and you're gone.
Hmm. Yeah. Right, well, anyway, we wish Ian the best of luck. And we'll see what happens over the next few years. Moving on, Arjen Robben from old Chelsea days. He retired July 2019, Arjen Robben, and decided to come back at the age of 36. I mean, he's only been out for 1 year, to play for Groningen, who I think he played, that was his first club. And he's kind of going back to help out. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of clubs afflicted by the corona crisis in one shape or form. So that's, he said that he's followed his heart to kind of do that after listening to fans. So, I mean, to be fair, he's still probably at 36, got enough pace to be the fastest player in the Villa team if he came to Villa until the end of the season.
I was always a big Robin fan. I thought he was a great player.
I mean, there's no coincidence that after Chelsea, I mean, he went from PSV to Chelsea, but after that, he went to Real Madrid and Bayern Munich. So
he was devastating for Chelsea, but he had an equally respectable, I mean, a very respectable career at both Real and Bayern. I mean, yeah. top midfield, top, almost a striker, wasn't he? Really, he was like so unmarkable.
At 36, you could probably, when you look at the pace on the wings in the Villa team, you could probably get into that. I mean, this is not a case of like Glenn Whelan, that as soon as he leaves Villa, he went to Hearts and then he got pushed off to Fleetwood.
Fleetwood, isn't he?
He got sacked by email, didn't he, Glenn Whelan?
Yeah, apparently. And then he got punted from there.
Mm. I mean, Arjen Robben or El Ghazi, I don't know.
Oh, Trezeguet, I was thinking more of.
Trezeguet, crikey. Trezeguet in his Zimmer frame trying to beat the last man. Yeah.
I mean, Robben at 36 looks younger than Trezeguet. And I mean, Trezeguet, as we've mentioned a few times in this podcast, looks about 46. But anyway, well. Allegedly. Right, just want to say a big shout out, as per usual, to the new My Old Man Said patrons who have joined us. Kyle Patton, Mike McKay, Alex Barrett, Dan Wilson, Andy Quinn, Kevin Keenan, and also a shout out to Michael Smith for upgrading. Thank you very much. Remember seeing Mike in Match Club at the Wolves game, I think pretty much straight after he joined.
Look around. I see a lot of new faces. Shut up! Which means a lot of you have been breaking the first two rules of Fight Club. Man, I see in Fight Club the strongest and smartest men who've ever lived. I see all this potential.
Match Club is one of the perks of being a My Old Man Said patron, the little secret society we have going on match days, where we, it's more like it's like therapy, I think somebody described it as.
Yeah, it's like group therapy.
Yeah, group therapy, almost like AA. We meet before the game, then we have a little half-time chit-chat, and then after the game, it's like the AA session, isn't it? I imagine it all sat in a circle, hugging each other.
Singing Kumbaya, trying to calm each other down.
Hopefully by the time this podcast comes out, the second part of the Sean Teal interview extra, patron extra, will be up as well. So if you fancy joining us in Match Club, and I think it will be quite a lively affair for the Liverpool and Manchester United games, then please do go to myomansaid.com, click on the patron link and join up there. And any problems connecting up to Match Club, just drop me a line. Right, let's move on to the main topic, which we did discuss at length, although Dan was not there after the game. So this is a first chance to get his input and what he saw. I mean, for me, I was talking about this is after those first four games of the restart. This I saw because of we only got 2 points in that start. This was a trio of games that on paper, it's probably the hardest trio of games we had in the running. I mean, before we saw kind of Chelsea, I was looking at Wolves were, you know, potentially a tougher team to get something out of. Chelsea, you know, were pretty impressive. But anyway, Wolves, Liverpool, United, I thought we need to get something, anything from these games just to set us up for when we come around the final corner, you know, the final furlong in those last four games, that we're actually in a position where we can get out of this. I mean, we've been lucky. I mean, Watford, I thought they would at least get a point out of the Southampton game on Sunday. So we seem to have a lot of luck, because the problem with this one was even if we got a point, psychologically would have been out of the relegation zone, and even if the other teams won their game, would still be within one result away from them. But this not winning this game set us up. Suddenly you saw we're in the relegation zone and it's fast appearing to be like quicksand. Suddenly, we had the game in hand. Now, it's the other teams with the game in hand. And that was psychologically, that's a big shift in the picture. Going into the game, last podcast, Chris had a message for Dean Smith, which was a formation. He was suggesting going back to the five at the back, or three centre backs with two wing backs, and essentially playing a Christmas tree. We got a variation of that, although it was four at the back, but he went for the, was he listening to public demand, do you think, for the two up top? Or was this just a reaction to the end of the Newcastle game where we seemed to made some kind of impression?
Probably the latter, to be honest. I think he probably just rewarded the team that finished reasonably well at Newcastle.
So you had Grealish at the head of a, which was essentially a diamond, and Davis and Samatta up front with Nakamba on one side, Horahan on the other. I mean, how did you see that playing out, Dan, in the initial stages?
I think our formation and our change was three games too late. And to be honest, if anything, that the formation that we needed the other one for this game, that I think that you look at man for man and how the game played out. I think we looked really, really short. I think we were really short on ideas. Similar to your introduction to this piece, really, that I was very mindful of the games that we had ahead. You have to park now what has gone. But
it's one of those games where, and this happened against, well, pretty much all of those games, because going into every game so far, all you got to do is look at the table and go, we are the underdogs.
Yeah.
But you get to, let's say, half time, and you think we're in this game. We're in it to win it now. This is a winnable game. And suddenly this Wolves game, we held them at bay.
We did, but I would say that Wolves played within themselves. I think that they, when they wanted to hurt us and when they really moved the ball, particularly for their goal, it was with devastating pace and the movement and even the way that, was it Dendonka, wasn't it? Even the way he moves the ball and fight, it was clinical. And I think that across the entire game, the most clear cut opportunity that we really fashioned was in the first half when Grealish squared to Hourihan. The rest of it didn't feel like we had urgency. It didn't feel like, I never felt like we built up a head of steam. And I don't know whether that's because our form's so dreadful. I'm not set on the formation. I think we're really short in terms of personnel. I'm actually parking my view on Smith and the coaching at the moment, because I think we're going to find out very, very quickly in the next 10-14 days, I think, what Villa's true resolve is here. Yeah. Because you're going into a bizarre situation that I'll just say what I need to say about Liverpool and United that's ahead of us is that Liverpool perversely becomes the more winnable of the games, because Wolves and United are vying for that Champions League spot. I think United is going to be a really, really tough game, because that's going to arrive at a point where they're going to need to be ahead of the likes of Wolves.
You've also got the situation where there's no pressure on Villa at Anfield, because nobody expects anything. Mm-hmm. So they can relax a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And go for it. And, you know, that's been a situation which we've had over the last few years. Well, last few years we were in the Premier League and we had reasonably good success there. I think three wins in the last six, only one defeat.
And I think there was a couple of other subtle things in the game that got missed. And I did a bit of a write-up, because in fact, I can't recall the last game where I actually opened my laptop during a game. So I thought, I've got to start sticking some of these down, because it will be the reason why we go down, is that our defence came in for some praise after the game. And I thought, if anything, we were fortunate in the first half, and it was picked up by none of the main commentators. None of the main press have really picked up on it. But the two that stuck in my mind was that the first chance that they really got, where Jimenez darts in front of Taylor from a corner and it sort of hits Nyland, and that, you know, goes down as a good save or block, could easily have been 1-0 quite early in the game. The second one was Doherty, the right back, I think, ghosts past Nakamba like he's not there. You know, Nakamba's got, I think, one of the worst ratings for being dribbled past in the entire division. So it was no surprise, I suppose. But then he gets in on goal and fires into the side netting. You know, we did nothing like that all day. And Wolves really just waited for their chance, I thought, like a lot of teams do against us. And that, my fear is that we could go into games like Liverpool, United, and we could find ourselves behind quickly from more clinical teams.
You touched on it there. In terms of and Smith has mentioned it, and obviously spent a lot of time working on this, because our defence was absolutely atrocious. You know, it's the worst in terms of goals conceded. But when you look on the shots on target against Villa in the restart so far, it looks good. In terms of being successful, I mean, Sheffield United, one shot on target.
Yep.
Chelsea, despite having 74% possession, only had five shots on target. And, I mean, they could have destroyed us, let's be honest here. Newcastle only had three shots on target and Wolves only had two.
But I think it's the context of those chances that to go. I don't want to dwell too much on the Newcastle game, but look at how they scored their goal. It was, you won't see a more amateurish piece of defending.
But let's say the defence is doing all right. But that was, I mean, our problems against Newcastle and Chelsea were midfield.
It's woeful. Yeah,
the midfield covering. So does this make, because of concentration and Phil, I'll aim this one at you. Do you think this focus on getting the defence right has completely taken away any threat at the other end?
Yes, it definitely has. And like you said, when it's like a seesaw, they just can't get the balance right. It's like they're either all defense or they're all open. And like Dan said earlier on, you could have played that formation and been a bit more open and things in the first three games, or even had that attitude in the first three games. You go into the Wolves and thinking, and I think everybody, like in Match Club, when they seen the lineup come out, just went, ooh, that looks a bit bad. But like you said, you get the half time and we're still in it. And it's the C Traore warming up on the sideline. And it's like everybody just sort of steals himself. Then he comes on, and within a minute, they've scored. And then that's their job done for the day. Teams just treat us like children. They hold us at arm's length. Mm. And they know they only need to score one, because we're not going to score a goal at the minute.
Once Traore was on, as soon as they scored, it played straight into their hands, because they had the ultimate counter-attacking threat. So, you know, they were happy for us to come on to them. And that was the problem. Despite the invitation, we didn't really have a key to get in there. I mean, Chris, you must have been frustrated by that yet again, the lack of not only guile and smarts, because you would need that to break through this defence that had six clean sheets in the last seven games, Wolves, but lack of, bite and determination.
I think I said it after the game, I've said it a few times, we really are a team built in the mirror image of our manager, aren't we? You know, Dean Smith, lovely guy, but we are such a nice team. You know, Wolves are a really attractive side to watch. They're very well drilled. They play great football, but they can also mix it a little bit as well. And they've got a few relatively short guys in their team. Now, I thought going with a front two, we'd be a little bit more back to front, which we were, but it would potentially allow us to kind of grow into a game if we could hold the ball up and get the likes of Grealish, Horahan, etc., pushing on, which we did in patches. But we, as Dan said, we never got ahead of steam. We never got into a position where you thought, where you almost call it setting up base camp. We think, right, now we've got a platform. Now we can go and get at them. We just never... You know, whenever we'd get a free kick, for example, our set pieces were laughable again.
I'd absolutely. And I'm really,
against a team like Wolves, where the reality is you're playing against a back five when they don't have the ball, their fullbacks can bomb on. But because we were set up so narrowly, everything's going through the middle against a really wide team that really stretches the game. You know, you look at both of their fullbacks and the wingers, they were hugging the touchline, they were drawing us out. And we just didn't have any way to get round them. We weren't good enough to play through them. And if the tactic is pass the ball to Grealish and rely on a moment of genius, that ain't gonna work very often, is it?
The tactic is give it to Grealish, get him fouled as close to the penalty box as possible. But then, going back to what you said, if that is your only option of constructive attacks, some of the deliveries were just, I mean, embarrassing.
Yeah,
embarrassing, I mean, is the word. Yeah,
there was a comment from, and I said this in a Match Club, there was a comment from Glenn Hoddle after about, I want to say, about 75 minutes of the game, and it really summed up where Villa are at right now. And he simply said, you look at how Villa are set up, you look at their personnel, and you look at the balance of this game in particular against a very good Wolves team, let's be honest. And he said, Villa have got to play out of their skin to win games of football. They are never, ever going to play badly and win a game of football.
And let me, I gave you the stats, shots on targets against Villa. Now, shots on target for Villa. And this is, you know, after this game, the Sheffield United game, that was when I said a little piece of me died, because I realised that was an opportunity. And if you don't have the tenacity to take it, we had six shots on target against Sheffield United's one. And, you know, straight after the game, some fans are saying, oh, but they, you know, fifth, sixth in the league, you know, they're going for Europa. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. They're there for the taking. Look what happens to Sheffield United in every game since they've played us.
That's a very valid point.
They've been swept aside.
They've been turned over. I mean, I just want to throw my final bit in.
Sorry, just to finish the stats. Chelsea, four shots on targets. And we could have, if we had that directness, that tenacity, we didn't squander our any, you know, that, you know, the Trezeguet free kick at the end, ridiculous. If we just, you know, gave ourselves a chance, then you never know. We could have snatched the most unlikely draw we've probably seen at Villa Park for a long time. Newcastle, then you get into games that, where's the urgency? Newcastle, two shots on target. Mm-hmm. Wolves, one shot on target. Nobody survives relegation with one or two shots on target.
And that will be the frustration, is we'll arrive at the end of the season and I was looking back across it, as dangerous as it is, just today, as putting together something, just highlighting how naive and the false flags, if you like, as to our whole season, where these things aren't new. There's been so many games where, you know, it's not been like the players have been falling onto their off their feet at the end, because you think, you know, they've given absolutely everything here, but they've lost, and, you know, or they've actually, you know, tried to play out of their skin. I don't know whether this is a symptom of the lack of fan presence. I don't know whether it's the lack of actual, you know, the huge pause in the season. But I look to things in game that they're, you know, Chris and obviously yourself, David, just mentioned how poor our set pieces are. But there's been a number of, and Wolves concentrated, my final point really, that you've seen across Newcastle and the Sheffield United game and the Chelsea game. We get ourselves into, keep ourselves in the game, we get ourselves into advanced positions, and I've lost count now of the amount of players and the amount of times who deliver a ball in that's overhit, or that is so poor a delivery into the opposition penalty box as to make Davis and Samatta's job completely pointless. You know, we get ourselves into dangerous positions and carry no threat. How can that be?
I mean, the stat that backs up your no threat is your supposed best player in Grealish has had one shot on target in four games.
Yeah.
Well, he's been a combination of absolutely marked out of the game or heads elsewhere. And one thing that did come to me earlier.
Well, say heads elsewhere, just rubbish. Yeah. Like, you know, passes and there's nobody there, or, you know, poorly delivered crosses. Mm.
But one other thing did occur to me, and I felt a little bit about Luis, really, that you can't do everything yourself. And I'll take it off Grealish for a moment. There was a couple of times during the Wolves game where I looked at Hourihane, I looked at Nakamba, and I thought, Luis is busting her gut to make up ground, was doing a lot in the middle with zero help. Absolutely no help. But with an element of composure, and where you could say, do you know what, he's probably one of few who you can arguably say have improved post-lockdown.
Well, you can see some genuine quality, can't you?
Well, you can, yeah. But he's surrounded by...
Morons.
Well, you look at Trezeguet, to all the other names that if you were looking into Villa and saying which players would you take, no way that they're just not even in it, are they?
If you're just looking at players that you're not expecting them to be world beaters, but if Trezeguet could do a job, he would have scored goals against Newcastle. He'd have scored at least one, let's say. He'd have put that ball somewhere and it would have been interesting in the last seconds against Chelsea. Mm. But not even doing the fundamentals. This is the problem. They're not doing the fundamentals.
Yes. There's one other elephant in the room, and I have to be, you know, I've always been, tried to be constructive in my criticism of Nyland, but... to have a goalkeeper who doesn't inspire confidence of the players in front of him, I think is incredibly dangerous. And we're now at a point where you need to rely upon your goalkeeper. He got off on what would have been an absolutely calamitous error again at the weekend.
It would have been dropped if they scored from that, I think. Mm. It's as simple as that. I mean, but he doesn't... I mean, he hasn't had much to do. I've read out the shots on target, and that's a testament to Villa's organisation defensively, at least in terms of, you know, stopping the opponents. But that's meant to give you a foundation to then do something at the other end. So Nyland hasn't been under a lot of pressure, and, you know, he's a decent shot stopper. So,
well, top goalkeepers, though, they do the shot stopping bit, but they don't have, you know, goalkeepers infamously used to have a bit of crazy in them, I suppose. But I think that it's not true that you need a reliable, dependable goalkeeper. I want Nyland to be that goalkeeper, but it just in the three or four games back now,
you've lost your confidence in him, like, which we actually got back, I thought.
Yeah, well, if you said it to me after the Leicester game, has this person demonstrated to you why he's at Aston Villa Football Club and playing in the Premier League, I would have said absolutely yes. He's too much of a risk.
Yeah, there was two things. When we're 29 games, are we going to, and in the relegation zone, are we going to survive relegation? Two things that I would have thought that would have given us a chance would be the Villa Park crowd, because we had 6 out of 10 games at home, and Tom Heaton also. Just in, you know, if we're restricting teams to that low amount of shots on target, having Heaton could be the difference to getting a 0-0 than, you know, losing 1-0. But we haven't got those. I mean, when I say those two things, you just expect Grealish to play at a certain level, which he hasn't even been near. You expect a little bit more from McGinn, even though he's had a long layoff. And we're in a position where Smith obviously knows he's not up to speed to the extent that he was on the bench for the Wolves game. I mean, let's just quickly look at Grealish. I mean, against Chelsea, he was hardly in the game. He had 76 touches against Wolves. Normally, when Villa are doing well, he's 85 upwards anywhere to 100. But, you know, you read, you can read stats and what, you know, what do they mean? 93% pass completion, you think, oh, that's great. But a lot of those were made so deep. And when it came to those, the potential key passes, it was that 7% that didn't make it. Because those 93%, it's just him playing deep, you know, playing around the back or whatever.
Mm. I think with Grealish, all I would say is that he's clearly, you know, he's obviously our best player. He's obviously our marquee player. It's important to stay independent of the media spin and narrative, is that Grealish has been talked up massively in game, during game, in any of the punditry.
Oh, yeah. Before he kicked a ball.
Yeah. I mean, over the four games, I don't think this is his fault at all, by the way. I think it's a symptom of all the things I've mentioned. He has not been a standout footballer in those four games, I don't think.
No.
Chris,
how much value, if you just saw Grealish on those last four games, how much would you buy him for if he was offered to you?
It would depend what his minimum fee release is, isn't it? Depending on what that number is, you'd be like, well, I'm not paying any more than that.
Let's say there's no such thing. Yeah, just what kind of value of player is he playing at? And, you know, Phil, if you've got a figure as well.
Well, I think I asked Daniel Levy what he would pay for him over the last four games. That's the sort of figure.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
Because those four games, he's been a nothing. And McGinn, you'd probably want your money back, 1.5 or whatever it was.
John McGinn's a depressing one, because you can sort of see what Smith's and the management team are trying to do, and that's get him competitive game time and fitness. But it's at the worst time, and he looks so off the pace.
Yeah, he looks a shadow of himself, which is a real shame, because he was the other, you know, if Heaton wasn't around, you thought a fresh McGinn back. I remember we said before, you know, potentially having him back, he'd be like a cage lion. Well, he's just not. And it doesn't help that the way his team are playing doesn't really help him anyway. You know, he's had a couple of sort of half chances in games, but he wants to get on the ball. He wants to get forward. You know, he doesn't want to be sort of chasing around all game. We're not set up to get the best out of our best player.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yes.
Fullbacks, I mean, we're just playing Konsa obviously limits you, but these fullbacks aren't. I mean, Taylor, it was the only time where we played the first touch ball. He kind of volleyed it straight back, one touch, give and go. Got it back, but he was just a little, it needed, you know, the defender had a little bit of a head start on him and, you know, managed to shield the ball and let it run off. But that was the only time we seemed to get around the back of them. But that was quicker passing rather than this slow, methodical passing and then knocking it back and, you know, starting off again. And, you know, Wolves are just peeling carrots and smoking cigars at the back, waiting for us to come on them.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the fullbacks, Konsa, I've actually thought, hasn't actually done anything particularly wrong in this round of game, in these rounds of matches. But of course, you just need more from a fullback. You know, if Smith said, well, I want to be really solid at the back, fine. But do you want to stop goals or do you want to make goals? Because at this point in the season, scoring goals is what's going to keep you up. Secondly, onto Taylor, I actually think he got thrown into a really difficult game. And I thought he did a really good job, actually, in a really, you know, hard game to come into. So props to him for that. I mean, everybody knows he offers you next to nothing going forward. But in that kind of game, I don't think he was ever going to. But you're right, in terms of the, I mean, we've said this probably every podcast this season, haven't we, about pace. over the ground pace, like we don't have a Traore, not that anyone else does, but the tempo is the big thing. And when you're playing against a back five and you've got a front two who are being marked by three, even if Grealish is bombing on or not, you've either got to get men involved or you have to move the ball quickly. We know we saw what Wolves could do. They moved the ball side to side constantly, quickly. Chelsea moved it quickly. The reason we didn't get battered by the likes of Sheffield and Newcastle is because they moved the ball slowly. You know, I think we use the phrase quite a lot of times, myself and you, David, on your Match Club, that we don't have the extra gear and you need the gears to go through in the Premier League. You'll get away with it in the Championship because teams... sort of their defensive shape will fall and then you can pick your pass, you can play through it. Earlier in the season, Smith used the phrase, are we setting traps for teams? And I look at how we're playing now thinking, I don't see what the trap is to win the ball back and then get on, play in the transition. We're not fast enough in the transition to get up the field to then hurt a team. You know, modern fullbacks are quick, modern centre-backs are quick. Every team can react to Villa very quickly. So even if they make a mistake, which Wolves did, to be fair, we had two or three moments in the transition where he thought, right, we're in now. And then we stop.
Yeah, and that's the key. If you want to get Grealish running, you know, running through and running past the forward, you've got to be quicker in transition and have the defence on the back foot and also confuse them a little bit with quicker movement. You can't just be like, as soon as you see somebody in front of you, just laying it back and letting them reset.
We're not spontaneous in any way. No
spontaneity at all.
Which that comes back to things like set pieces. It's like if you don't have the pace to play through the field, you're going to have to go over the top or play aerial. It's like that means your set pieces, you know, whenever Grealish gets fouled, they become key. And isn't it our player with the most shots at goal has been Courtney Hawes? I mean, that speaks for itself.
Yeah. I mean, like we mentioned Nyland's mistake and, you know, he seems to have a mistake in him every game. But it's easy, you know, put a spotlight on defenders. I mean, just look at, you know, some of the poor balls of Grealish or Horahan where he hasn't beaten the first man. I mean, to me, these are like howling mistakes. And then you've got somebody who's really good in the air, Courtney Hawes, but he's good at winning headers, but he's not very good at doing anything with those headers.
Mm-hmm. I think that the thing about it is, and this is where I do feel sympathy for the coaching team, is that we get ourselves into those opportunities and then the decision making is incomprehensibly poor. You know, there was the one on the stroke of half time where between Grealish and Hurahan, they managed to dispossess themselves almost.
They tripped over the ball and it went out for throwing, didn't they? It was laughable.
And I think just to pick up on the point about House and having any chances as well, it's given our height at corners, it's amazing how few goals we scored between Mings and House. You know, but there we are.
I mean, when Villa won the league in 81, a contribution, and it's a contribution of any top team, is your centre backs chipping with goals from set pieces. It's as simple as that.
Yep.
And you know, Mings hardly ever, and you know he's scratching around trying to claim that Watford goal because he's so desperate.
Yeah,
and I'm not getting at him. I'm just saying centre backs should be chipping in.
But I think that we've reached the point very very quickly that where you know no one is above criticism, and you know that there isn't that goal return there. I don't think Mings's form's been amazing either, to be honest. You know, and he's got a good. There's a bit of protectionism as well that Smith was very quick to say Konsa was at fault at Newcastle. When both centre halves were AWOL, you know.
Yeah, I mean that was probably Courtney House was the main culprit in that one.
Well, yeah.
But the fact is, you know, we're in a relegation battle, and we've got a strike force that has only scored one goal combined in the whole season. And
it's quite a betting slip, that one, isn't it? Let's all.
no goals in those four games so far. And I mean, come on, we really haven't got much hope on that basis. I mean, you would have hoped, but, you know, if Keenan Davis had got one in these four games, or he would have been up and running and had a bit more confidence. I mean, Samatta never looked lightly in the last game or two.
Nope.
When he came on, when he started, all the same.
Yeah, the break seems to have ruined Samatta. I don't know what has happened over the break. Was he like isolated? Was he left out? You know, follow your fitness plan and we'll see you whenever this starts up again or something. He just seems to be completely lonely. I mean, I've seen Instagram photos of him and Nakamba seem to be quite friendly and things like that, but he just doesn't seem to have a relationship on the pitch with anybody at all.
I think he's a proper goal scorer type striker, isn't he? He needs service. You know, you saw that in the cup final. You give him a chance, he'll bury it. And I mean, there was the header at Newcastle, which I'd class as a half chance. You'd probably expect him to hit the target, but it was a half chance. Whereas I think if you give him good you know, same as someone like Wesley, which we said, you know, throughout the season as well. If you give Wesley good service, he's shown he can put the ball in the net, but we just don't put the ball, you know, you look at the service Abraham had the previous season. Abraham had missed two or three a game, but he'd always get in another chance and he'd usually bury it. And look at, but my final point is, in terms of Grealish and others, look at the amount of penalties we used to get, which is always an indicator traditionally, isn't it, of how proactive you are in the final third. We've barely had a penalty all season.
A lot of it is like, you know, the midfielders running on, isn't it, into the box. That's 100%. When they get the trips.
Yeah, I mean, that was what Grealish was just always good value for, wasn't he? It was, you know, he'd carry the ball into the penalty area and then you know you can't dive in.
Yeah. And that's, as you keep saying, he's always too deep. And if he's on the ball, yeah, that's where you want him, because you just do the maths. Most fouled player in the Premier League ever, and get him in the box then with the ball. penalties ahoy.
Stand on the penalty spot and do not move.
I mean, you just see our players, whenever our players do make it into the final third and maybe make it into like a corner, they just put their foot in the ball and hold it, waiting for Grealish to come into that triangle corner of the box each time. It's like, right, I've got to where I need to be. Where's Jack? Where is he? You know, they need to start taking a bit more responsibility themselves.
Yeah, I mean, get it, you know, get it around the box, you know, start diving, or any dark arts to get the rub of the green, for God's
just
sake.
Just have a shot.
Have a shot.
I mean, that's the thing with McGinn, isn't it? McGinn, when you've got McGinn and Hourihan on the field and you can get the ball in and around the penalty area, I'd fancy McGinn against any goalkeeper. We've seen him do it enough times.
Mm-hmm. And Luis, yeah, as well.
And Luis can do it.
Hourihan, just, you've got to press.
They can all hit a good ball, but we don't work an opportunity. We slow it right down and lose momentum, or we're not patient enough. And Jack's guilty of this a lot of the times, where he'll take all the pace out of the game that we lose a bit of advantage, or he'll get into a position around the penalty area and then he'll force the issue. And it's just learning to, you know, it's the final ball. It's the decision making. Yet again, it's the fine margins and the attention to detail.
I get a feeling Grealish will make his career by playing for a team that's got 10 decent players, and he'll see about a third of what he sees of the ball now, but he'll look better just because, you know, he'll only need a touch here and there. And I don't think he's got it to carry a team like Villa. It's a bit, it's a tall order, but
absolutely.
I mean, we're talking about the midfield not doing enough, and that is where our superstars are, you know, McGinn and Grealish. So, yep. I mean, that tells you maybe a lot of it has been hype. There's a bit too much hype rather than ability, even though they're both decent players. We've had them up on pedestals and they probably don't quite deserve to be there.
Nope. I mean, I will honestly admit to taking the time to actually watch the Man United game against Norwich at the weekend, the cup game. And there's all the rumour of Jack going to Man United and a lot of people saying, oh, he'll go to Man United, he'll play, he'll be the final piece, he'll improve them. But Bruno Fernandes is a better player. Paul Pogba, when he can be asked, let's be honest, is a truly world-class player. It's just if he can be asked. Even Matic in the middle of the park, he's brilliant at his position. You think, as things stand with Man U, where the hell is he going to play in that team?
Yeah. Anyway, that's his problem, not ours. We've got bigger problems.
Problems we have.
Big problems. Just to finish off, and we can't talk about this because we'll be here all week, I think. The Dean Smith situation, I mean, that's another podcast. I mean, silly website, the clickbait websites, and if anybody really retweets and considers the Football Insider as gospel, then you got to take a look at yourself in the mirror and think whether it's worth going on with this football business, if that's what you think is intelligent. I can't call it journalism. It's just based on an equation. Villa have not won in, what is it, 8 games now in relegation zone. Oh, manager under pressure. I mean, yeah, well, that's like common sense. But the reality is, Perslow backs this man, and I, you know, when he gave him a new contract, we had a meeting with him, and I asked him, you know, why the timing of this new contract? Wouldn't you have preferred to see if he was up for the job? And he was, Dean Smith is front and center of the plans going forward for the, you know, immediate future and beyond. And his cohorts are going to look a bit sheepish if they get rid of him now, because they are responsible and they put all their chips on him. So they're not going to boot him out. Also, if we get relegated, let's keep it as an if at the moment, would we keep Dean Smith? I mean, I had some writer's article saying he would keep him for the championship. I would wait to see how he reacts to these next tests ahead. And you'll get to learn a lot about Dean Smith in these last six games and what the application is in terms of, can he get a team up for this? Is he Mr. Nice Guy Dean Smith? Can he get this team to show some fight in these last six games? And you know, we'll find out about the fibre of the man. And then you make the decision whether you keep him or not.
Well, it's all on the assumption that in the event that Villa got relegated, that he didn't resign.
Yeah.
So
There is that, but I mean, he can mitigate no end of stuff like Tom Heaton, Wesley, McGinn.
Well, wasn't it post-Wolves was we're the only team who's had to play four games in, was it, 11 days?
Yeah, although you can spin that to say we've had an extra game to get up to match fitness. So, we'll get into that, the Dean Smith debate, as this plot thickens. But it's getting to the stage where the custard is getting thick already, and most of it's on Dean Smith's and Purslow's face.
There's an image for.
Right, let's step this up a bit and let's close out with overrated or underrated. Right, we are down to two. We used to do three, but now we are waffling on about football again. So we've gone for the combo of Alan Wright and the imperious Bosco Balaban, who was always going to feature in this. It was just a matter of when. Mr. Bud, who should we go for first?
Let's start with the miniature Alan Wright, shall we?
Yes. You've been campaigning for him to be in this. Was it the third time? Third time lucky?
I'm a fan.
You're giving your opinion away already,
That's
I think.
That's bias, right? Isn't it, then?
Yeah, a bit bias, isn't it?
Arsed.
I think that we should always ask this question at the start of underrated and overrated. Why did we buy a player? So why did we buy Ian Wright?
Alan
Wright.
If only we did buy Ian Wright.
Which we bought Ian Wright, Jesus.
If only.
At the time of buying Wright, it was that season, obviously, when Little came in, 94-95, obviously, Big Ron had just been sacked.
Staunton was kind of fading away.
Yes, Staunton was kind of, and he'd play all over the place, wouldn't he, Staunton? Sometimes he'd be a left back, he could play centre back, or he could play left side of midfield. And Little had set his stall out by saying, I want to play a back three, I want to play wing backs, which he was a very early, you know, user of the system, and it had worked well for him. So he wanted
Staunton's
people
Staunton's legs
could,
were kind of going, yeah, so he couldn't really get up and down.
Yeah, exactly.
Did Staunton go to Liverpool? I just need to know this.
He went back and forth, didn't he?
Yeah, we used to share him.
Yeah, Staunton stayed a couple more years, didn't he? And then he went to Liverpool a few years later. A couple of seasons.
Anyway, let's talk about our messiah, Alan Wright. Back to Chris.
Staunton came back to Villa, though, didn't he?
Came back to Graham Taylor.
Yeah.
Well, he went to Liverpool, came to Villa Park as Liverpool, got sent off. Everyone times said, fuck off the pitch. Then we welcomed him back like a... All like is the, forgiven,
like,
Steve.
Like the fickle bunch we are.
Anyway, as you were, Chris.
So it was at the same time we brought in sort of Gary Charles, and it was that first influx of players that, you know, Little brought in with, you know, Gary Charles brought in Tommy Johnson, didn't he? Franz Carr, I think, came in.
Franz Carr.
Legend.
I mean, you actually look at the first couple of sort of transfer windows, if you want to call them those, of Little, and pretty much every signing worked. There weren't too many flops in that time. So we bought him for £1 million from Blackburn, ironically, who were top of the league at the time. So it was a step down from the team who obviously would go on to be champions that season.
Yeah.
Villa would avoid relegation just about at the end of that season.
But he was chuffed with that move.
Yeah. But Wright would make, you know, the left sort of wing back position his own for over, you know, he was there from 95 to 2003.
When you first saw him, I don't know if you remember, you know, if you remembered your own experiences at that time, didn't you think he's a bit too small to play football?
Yeah. I mean, one of the first times I saw him play, it was weird because I never used to sit in the Trinity Road enclosure, but I sat quite near the, really low, and obviously because I was a little short ass, and as was he, with the camber of the pitch, you'd see him run over to the sort of what would have been the Doug Ellis side, or Witten Lane as we now call it, and all you'd see was his head and the ball. You think, where's his body gone? He was that small. He just disappeared.
Child on the pitch.
Because this is the thing, I could never convince myself that this was as good as it gets for us at left back. I just thought he's going to get out jumped on the far post every time, surely. But you know, we've scoured the internet and we've found evidence of him, Alan Wright, out jumping Duncan Ferguson, who's never been out jumped in his career, the Everton striker, Bolton's Ricardo Gardner, and then one which I'm sure Alan Wright's got on. He's either got it printed out and stuck on his fridge, or he's got it in a frame above his mantelpiece, out jumping David Beckham. So he had the capabilities of a kangaroo type or a salmon type leap,
spring, didn't he?
But yeah, I always thought, come on, this summer, let's sign somebody who's about, you know, at least 5'10", 5'11" at left back.
Yeah, to look at him, you'd think he'd be like a sitting duck who'd get targeted, but his positional play and his awareness, and he had a turn of pace. Yeah. He was so good that he kind of made it work for him, and you know, his delivery was good, and his big thing was always...
He had a shot on him as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get on to that in a minute, but it was...
I mean, the ball was about one third of his total height. Yeah. But.
You know, consistency was the name of the game with Wright. I always thought it was, you know, he was never injured, never suspended. He always was, you know, 7 out of 10. Every week, and yeah.
Are they called model professionals?
I think you'd call him that, yeah.
But like Sibirio?
He just got on with his job.
He was a heroin addict. That was his only downfall.
Yeah, he was drinking partners with Paul McGrath.
I'm joking. But model professional.
Well, they did him a statue, but people didn't believe it was to scale, did they?
Yeah, it was one of those Corinthian figures, wasn't it? But he had a knack of scoring brilliant goals, didn't he? He had an absolute rocket on him. You know, every once in a blue moon, he'd take a pot shot and it'd just fly in. You know, there was the famous volley at it was Middlesbrough, wasn't it? Where he sort of flicked it up and blasted it in the far corner.
Scored a good one at against Spurs.
Yeah, Spurs, the volley was an amazing Spurs one. Was a top corner job as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was one at Wimbledon as well that he scored that was similar. He never scored a tapping.
Phil, any fond memories of Mr. Wright?
The best thing you can say about him is the position wasn't a problem. I mean, we'll look at the disasters that we've had over the years in fullbacks, and when Alan Wright's there, he's just there. He may as well be printed on the team sheets every week. It's fine.
Yeah.
Nothing to worry about.
One of those fullbacks where it doesn't matter who you're playing, you don't have to worry. Even if he's playing Ronaldo or whoever, it's like, where he's our left back, that's what we've got, and he's going to be all right. It's not like you're thinking our target's going to get absolutely fried by Traore. Although Alan Wright versus Traore would be a great thing to watch.
It'd be a brilliant battle, wouldn't it?
Just clinging to his boot.
Just dragging him along. I mean, at least Wright, unlike Target, doesn't like limp off scared, shitless after about, was it quarter of an hour? Oh, no, I've just smelt Traore, right? That's it, I'm off. You know, Wright would stick to the task.
Yeah, good stat on
I love this
Alan
one.
Wright.
I can't believe it. I love it, though.
I'll hand it over to Chris.
So Wright currently sits as Villa's third all-time European appearance maker with 26, only behind Mortimer and Sid Cowans.
Remarkable.
Which, I mean, does that say how good he was, or does it really show how, you know, the period he was at Villa were a pretty bloody good team, and generally in Europe, you're thinking, does that show how slapdash we were towards European football in that period?
Now, Alan Wright just loved those Intertoto games. He was always volunteering. Anybody coming off holiday early for these Intertoto?
Fancy coming to Wren in July.
Who wants to lose to Helsingborgs? Me!
He just loved the free trips, old Alan Wright.
It's a free holiday, isn't it?
Mm. How many years did he do at Villa again? It was about 8, wasn't it?
He was there from 95 to 03.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if he got on the, although I'm not allowed to say, if he got on the shortlist of fullbacks.
Is that
for the
shortlist, David? Yeah. You're so heightist. Just because you're 6'10".
No, I'm not. No pun intended. But I think he was there and thereabouts. But I would say probably deserved, because 8 years, and as you say, you know, model professional.
He definitely was.
Always 7 out of 10. No qualms with Mr. Wright. So underrated or overrated? I think, you know, I'm going to go straight underrated, because he doesn't really get the plaudits.
Underrated from me. Yep.
Criminally underrated.
Unanimous. Phil? Underrated.
There you go, Alan Wright. And you should Google Alan Wright out jumps. That's what we did. see what you can find. The Beckham one's quite funny, because his face is of pure pain as he's being out jumped by Alan Wright. Right, moving on to the one and only, the mighty Bosco Balaban. I think I mentioned this story. I used to go to Croatia a bit. And if there's one thing, you know, if you get talking to any guy though who's into football and they ask you who you support, as soon as you say Aston Villa, it's like the eyes light up. They buy you a pint straight away. This is mainly in Zagreb I'm talking, because they're buying you a pint just to say thank you very much for like the 7 million euros that Aston Villa gave Dynamo Zagreb back under the tutelage of John Gregory.
Is it a bit like, you know, like when you see like signs that says this project was part funded by the European Union? Is there things in Zagreb that says this was part funded by Aston Villa?
Pretty much, yeah. Thank you, Bosco, but most
this
of all,
city
thank
is
you very
paired
much.
With Aston.
That's what they should have gone for. This one, this is a bizarre. Why did we buy him? Because we already had Engel, Dublin, Vassell. Was Dublin slipping away? Roughly translated, 5.8 million. So this is not a cheap. It's not a cheap acquisition. I mean, Engel was the marquee. Probably just was about nine million pounds.
Yeah, the season that. It may have been that Angel hadn't come good at that point. Of course, the season Balaban arrived was the season Angel first kind of exploded.
Mm. After we tried to break Angel,
yeah.
Because he'd scored a hatful of goals for Zagreb.
Mm-hmm. And he's an full international, wasn't he, as well?
Yeah, mm-hmm. 69 in 158 games in the Croatian League between it was Zagreb and I forget the name of the side.
Because as soon as he left at Bruges in the Belgium League, he was banging them in again, 27 and 30, one season, the season before, 25 and 24. So, you know, he knew where the goal was.
Apart from Aston Villa.
Apart from Aston Villa.
He didn't look like a footballer.
I mean, they ridiculed him. And I remember when we went to Bodymore Heath and Ian Taylor ridiculed him in public as well.
We just said he didn't want to be there.
All I asked Ian was who looked least like a footballer.
And he didn't have to think about it much, did he?
No, it was him and Savo, wasn't it? That's what
he said. I remember watching his debut and it was like in a bar in Newcastle. I was only 18, drove into the bar with the friends and against United. I mean, we took a lead early, a typical Villa United game.
Mm-hmm.
And on came Bosco Balaban. People ask you, yo, who's this? And I go, oh, where do you see this?
Wait until you see this.
You won't have seen anything like this.
No, the ball comes into the box and United keeper at the time, Roy Carroll, flops it straight to Balaban. and like we've talked about before, these players that have a great reputation and the one thing to do that forever they're tired with, he just blasts it wide and it's just like, ah, no.
That'll define you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Marked for life.
We'll be replacing him with Peter Crouch later in the season.
As you would expect, he didn't have much good to say about Villa. I come into training every day knowing there is nothing for me, even though I was constantly told if I waited long enough, I would get my chance.
Oh, well.
But the more you train and don't play, the less training means to you. That isn't going to get me match fit or get me into the Croatian squad for the World Cup. I mean, this is the problem. Croatia had a decent...
really good team, yeah.
Decent international team in the last few decades. And this is what he's got his eye on. And yeah, he's basically put on the compost heap at Bodymore Heath. And there's no way into into the Croatian team.
But the annoying thing about him was the second that he left Villa Park, he became a top European striker again, didn't he?
He just didn't want to be there, I think. And that's basically what Taylor alluded to, didn't he? That none of the players were impressed with him because his attitude absolutely stank, apparently. He just, he was on quite big money, got his big move and just thought, ah, fuck it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently went in begging Graham Taylor, did he not?
For a place in the team. He said that was his low point at Villa, was actually having to go and beg for a game.
And then he says, the week was definitely the worst time for me in England, but I still want to play in English football. I like the game here. And I think it was called the Premiership at that time, before it became the Premier League. It's one of the best leagues in the world, not as good as the Belgium League or the Croatian League, apparently. In terms of how he did, I didn't get around to investigating this again, or let's say refreshing my memory, but there was lots of rumours of brown paper envelopes in those days, especially and with John Gregory, because after he went to Derby, after this, he kind of disappeared. And this is a promising manager and a big personality who was never seen on these shores again and obviously had to play his trade in India.
It wasn't he dismissed from Derby, supposedly unfairly. It was a bit of a grey area, should we say. And because
of
that,
talks
because
of the,
because of the investigation, he couldn't work. So he was basically banned from working for about 2 or 3 years, I think. And then by that point, of course, his stock had fallen.
And I remember Engel and Balaban's signings were mentioned in these conversations.
Well, Engel's signing, I don't know, I'm not going to say there's any connection to Gregory, but Engel's signing was infamous for there being a discrepancy between the fee that Villa paid and the fee that River Plate received.
Yeah. But I remember there have been a bit of a cloud above this. I mean, without just throwing out accusations from distant memories.
Mm.
So something worth looking into if you're kind of interested. Maybe if I get a spare time, I'll look into the Balaban situation.
I think the Balaban signing was supposedly part of what was part of basically Gregory's demise at Villa, that I think Ellis was so unwilling to give him, I think it was 8 million at the time, wasn't it, from Muzzy, is it? Because he'd spent however much on Balaban, and he was sat on the bench as well. And I think, one of Gregory's parting shots was to Ellis, if I let you buy him this week, where would you play him in the team on Saturday? I would put him on the bench. So Ellis was like, hang on a minute, I'm going to have, the best part of £15 million worth of new signings sat on the bench doing nothing. I think that was kind of the start of the end of the road for Gregory, wasn't it? And he went not long after that.
I mean, he was subject to an investigation from the FA in 2002, and he was they failed to find anything untoward. However, there was some, conflict of interests identified as part of it.
Yeah, anyway, upshot, Balaban only made nine appearances, seven of those were substitute, failed to register in the nets. But how do you go for this one? Because he was sensational everywhere else. Goal a game man everywhere else. I remember at the time, I was just thinking, just let him have a run of games, And then when he came on, he was just, you were thinking, what kind of player is he? He had like the physique of, let's say, Gary Shaw, so a bit flight. So he was more of a fox in the box, and you'd hope he would finish. I can't remember if he had any speed to him. I think he must have been reasonably nippy.
He's a very similar player to Engel, to be honest.
But a bit more lightweight, I think, in physique. So, yeah, it was a strange one.
Overrated for me, with that money at that time.
Overrating when he came in, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, just ever so slightly massively overrated.
Yeah, Phil?
Yeah, overrated. Sold a lemon by Davor Suker.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, David Suker gave him a good reference.
Great striker. Did he have shares? We'll never know.
Right, so, I'm going overrated as well, because you're expecting, we've got a nice little lineup of strikers here, and this guy's 7 million euros, 5.8 pounds, so he must be reasonably good. He would have definitely been a YouTube striker, because people would have been frothing at the mouth with all the goals that he scored for Dynamo Zagreb in the YouTube highlights video. They'd have been going, wow, we've struck gold here, boys. And, he would have been a classic YouTube striker, I think.
Yeah, he was probably a MySpace striker. Did YouTube exist then? I don't know.
No, that's what I'm saying. If it did, that's what I'm saying.
He wouldn't have been in my top friends.
He'd have been... It'd have been the ultimate YouTube striker. So, Mr. Bosco Balaban, overrated in the world of Aston Villa. Bruges, underrated. Just statues of glory in the city of Bruges of Bosco Balaban.
Just an aside as means of as a fact that the FA discovered that 7 million of Juan Pablo Angel's 9.5 million pound transfer was agent fees.
Was it?
Oh,
yeah. Jeez. Oh.
Adam Crozier said that.
Wow, that's insane.
It's going to be your Tevez Mascherano situation again, isn't it?
7 million of 9 million being agents' fees. That is, that's modern day football for you folks. Insanity. I should have been an agent. Can you imagine pulling that deal? Right? If we were all agents, we would do a podcast, and the best episodes would be in the transfer window. At the end of the week, you'd be giving each other your progress.
I've got this left back. He's 4'2". European experience.
I just sold this Colombian for 9 million to this team called Aston Villa, and 7 million of that is my agent's fee. Pick that one out. Eat my commission.
On that note, we're off to the Cayman Islands.
Yeah, if only this parallel universe existed. Right, thank you very much for listening. We will dust ourselves down and pump ourselves with strange drugs and things to keep us alive for the ensuing double back-to-back games against our historical nemesis. Off to Anfield we go against Liverpool, and then we host Manchester United. God help us.
I was looking forward to going to Man United at home as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's always one of the first fixtures I look for as well. But alas, not. Thank you very much for listening. And if you can join us in Match Club, please do. I mean, there's a few patrons also that haven't hooked up yet. So get in there. It's definitely worth your while, especially if you want some company or you want to hear some rational analysis and Villa chat. Hopefully, if we can get something from Liverpool or Manchester United, then I think we're still game on in this battle. But we'll see what happens. Right, please do follow and subscribe so you know when the next show drops on Spotify or Apple or wherever you listen to the show. Any final words, gentlemen?
I'm glad Villa have got a break. You know, we've had four games back to back to back, very close together. I'm glad there's just a week's break until the next game.
Oh, he sounds like Dean Smith.
Yeah.
No, we're fatigued. I'm fatigued. I've done one podcast this month. I'm fatigued. I'm going for a lie down.
God, it says Match Club extra sessions. It just leaves us fatigued, doesn't it?
I know. It's strange, man. I mean, we nearly finished a podcast at 20 past 12.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's just put a spring in my step now.
I know. It feels early.
Right. Thank you very much, Mr. Phil Shaw, for joining us, Mr. Chris Bird and Dan Rogers. And until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
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 I know.
have another go.
You can say that again if you want.
Goodbye.
Yeah, there you go.
Can we do more kazoo?
Yeah, I like to kazoo. Me too. Because you can do anything with a kazoo. That's crazy.
Just kazoo it.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.